Welcome to Managing Uncertainty, a podcast series from the experts at BrightPath discussing global risk, business continuity, and crisis management. Will you be ready to lead your organization through its critical moment?
Welcome to the Managing Uncertainty podcast. This is Brian Strauser, Principal and Chief Executive here at BrightPath.
This is Bray Wheeler, Consultant here at BrightPath.
You know, I like to think that everybody belongs to a couple different tribes in their lives. And I don't mean like real tribes, but like the tribe of career or community that you've joined. And I've got, you know, the whole crisis management and business continuity communities and global security, and I'm Catholic, so that I've got my Catholic tribe and kind of thing. But I've
Red Sox Nation,
absolutely, and the Patriots and the Bruins, the Celtics. But you know, one of my tribes is I was never a firefighter, but I worked in law enforcement, so I kind of think of that as a tribe. And I'm an EMT, and I was an EMT in the past, and I am again now, and I think of that as my tribe. And when we were thinking about this podcast today, where we're going to talk about over responding but not overreacting, I was reminded of what very little I know about the fire service. And that is when there's a fire of some type, there's a set response. So a residential fire in Roseville, Minnesota is going to result in two engine companies, a ladder company and a BLS unit, and a chief, the battalion chief, going to that. And what that first engine in, the officer on that engine or the chief, if they get there before the apparatus, which is unlikely, the first thing they do is a size up, right? They walk around the incident, they take a look at it, and they're making an instantaneous decision. I'm calling for more resources, or I have what I need to handle this. And that call for resources is usually a little ahead of the actual need. Like, they look at it and they're like, well, I've got like two houses nearby. I'm going to have to mitigate against those homes being catching on fire. And I know that has a term in the fire service, I don't remember what it is, but they're going to try to protect these two houses, and right, he's going to need another two engine companies to do that. They're going to make that decision. So they're not, they're responding, but they're also kind of over responding a bit, because they're looking at, well, I might need this and might need this. I'm going to call for these units now.
Well, and typically EMS may be en route, police may be en route. So you have a lot of different emergency services kind of collapsing on that location,
power and gas
to make sure that the right amount of resources have been applied to that situation, or are on standby, to your point,
right?
Kind of waiting or starting to get into the trucks and ready to go. So yeah, it's really, really, I think where kind of this mantra comes from is really off of that metaphor. And when we think about crises or incidents, things like that, you really want, there's kind of a fine line that organizations typically walk between that kind of over respond and overreact. And where you definitely want to be is on that kind of over respond side of the house rather than the overreact. I think, for a lot of different reasons, because I think what ends up happening is if you tend to drift towards that overreact, or you have people that kind of get worked up easily, they're a little bit more apt to kind of stress the environment out, kind of overplay what's actually happening, all probably with good intentions, well-intentioned kind of reactions, but still complicating the response. Is you're creating stress, you're damaging the reputation of kind of the people and the process and those teams, cross-functional teams that you've stood up, your plans, all that kind of stuff. Seems like, I don't know if that's really the right approach, because everybody gets worked up and stressed out, and it's, I don't really like it. You know, I don't feel comfortable. I don't want to play in that space. So I think where you want to be very conscious of making that distinction is in that over respond. And it's almost a cultural thing. And it's almost something that you tell your leadership, you tell the cross-functional team, you tell key leaders and resources within the company that says, hey, our default is going to be to over respond to something. We're not going to overreact, but we're going to over respond, which means you might get pulled into conversations. You may get asked to do some things kind of at the outset, but we're going to assess the situation and determine, do we still need that amount of resources? Do we still need the full cross-functional teams? do we only need three teams? You know, what is going on? And let's apply the right amount of resources. Because I think that's part of the value that you get about over-responding is you're applying that right amount of resources to the situation. But you're also building that muscle memory and that confidence within the cross-functional team that says, hey, we're getting used to seeing these incidents. We're getting used to identifying what is severe, what's not severe, what's developing, what's not developing. And especially for a young or kind of fresh cross-functional team, it's super important that there's as much exposure to some of that stuff as possible so that people get a feel for what's important and what's not. But it also kind of demonstrates the value proposition that these mm-hmm. plans and cross-functional teams have in an organization, that within the broader organization, they see it as, hey, they're stood up to react to the fire that's happening in the organization, and they're consistently doing that. It's not, they picked this one, but not this one. And what are they really doing? I think this one's important. Why aren't they doing anything? That there is that, hey, we're going to surge a response each time, and we're going to assess it based on what we know at the outset. And as more people get in the room and say, hey, I also have this, I have this. Nope, I don't have any impact. I don't have any impact. I don't have any impact. You can really kind of surge a response to that, and you get a better picture of what's going on.
Yeah, I think that the kind of impetus for the idea behind this episode was something Brian and I had experienced a couple of months back, and that was, you know, we had a client who has a crisis management process,
mm-hmm.
A very well-defined one, I think.
Yeah.
But they rarely use it. I think they've really kind of put themselves in a place where they don't want to activate that except in the worst-case scenario. As opposed to what we were seeing, which was they had your best case scenario for a crisis in that you have a weather system coming in that you can see and predict and react to. And they were asking a lot of questions of a bunch of different people, like, what's this going to do? And are you looking at your plans? And we were just chatting casually with our client and said, well, why don't you just activate your crisis process? Or just use your crisis process, convene your crisis management team, and let's have an open conversation with you leading it, facilitating it, about this situation that you find yourself in with this severe weather system coming in. Actually, it was two severe weather systems coming into two different geographical locations
mm-hmm.
that could potentially have really disrupted some operations just because of the weather. Winter weather in one case and hurricane typhoon-like weather in another case. So let's talk about that openly, and let's put you in the middle of that as the crisis leader. As we said in the previous episode, let's make yourself important
right
in the middle of this and use your crisis process to have this conversation, because now you've activated it, so you're getting the benefit of that muscle memory of having worked through it. And two, you're having this open, broad conversation amongst a group of middle to senior leaders about what's going on, and you're in the middle of it. I thought it was just great positioning for them.
Right.
So it's like, and out of that, out of this conversation about having this happen, is Bray looks at me and goes, well, we want to over-respond, not overreact. And thus we kind of find ourselves in this conversation on the podcast.
Yeah, because even in that conversation, there was some apprehension of, well, you know, it doesn't really kind of him and Han, it doesn't really meet the kind of the criteria, or, you know, that seems like it's too much. It's not too much. If you've communicated that out to this team, which, you know, should be pretty close or developing those close bonds as a kind of a cross-functional team in those relationships, if you say at the outset, hey, we're going to get together more often than not, and we're going to do it in a kind of organized manner, and we're going to appropriately react. You know, if we have an active shooter, well, that's probably something that we're going to jump into relatively quickly. Stress is going to be relatively up. But if it's a weather system, why aren't we getting together and evaluating that kind of in the same way, but without the kind of natural stress that's happening, you know, with that situation? Because it, to your point, it positions the function, it positions that incident leader, that capability in front of people, and lets them see how this process works, so that you're developing that muscle memory and that practice and that comfortability with the process in some of these things that might be a little bit more low stress. So when you do get into the higher stress situations, when you jump into that, hopefully not, But if you should happen to jump into an active shooter situation, you understand what the, you're not fighting the process or the understanding of the process. You're able to kind of jump in and kind of understand what's going on and just start working the problem rather than trying to understand how you should go about working the problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think it's a chance to use your process the way your process was intended to be used.
Right.
Right.
I mean, you're using those things that you've outlined as a part of your plan, your framework, to bring that team together and evaluate the situation the way that your process was intended for that to work.
And it can be one of those things too, where it can be kind of your standard way that you operate is that's you're going to react to, say you have four levels of severity. You probably shouldn't be reacting to the lowest level. Say that's level four, level one's the highest. You probably shouldn't be convening at a level four. Probably shouldn't be convening at a level three. But say for every level two, we are going to convene and we're going to evaluate to see is this serious enough that we need to apply resources? Is there anybody in the room that can help? Or do we feel like it's trending still upward and it may reach that one and we need to prepare ourselves? You may also be in a situation where for a while, because you're new, say, you know what, for the first year, we're going to convene for every level three and up so that we can get comfortable, we can talk through, we can start to mature ourselves. And maybe halfway through the year you say, you know what, every level two. Or, you know, at a certain point you're mature enough and say, hey, we don't need to convene all the time. We have enough institutional knowledge, enough practice, enough kind of relationship credibility with each other that we don't need to convene as much anymore. We can back that off just a little bit and say, we're going to send out some communications around a level two. That's going to be the expectation, is everybody's going to get an awareness to level two. And we're going to convene kind of when the incident leader thinks or that business leader thinks. So there's different degrees in which you can kind of over respond, overreact. And some of that is a maturity thing. And some of it's kind of how culturally you should work. But at the very least, especially if you're a new kind of cross-functional team or you've had high turnover or something like that, over responding is more beneficial than not enough response, because again, we get back into the issues of, I don't know what's going on. I don't know who people are, what's happening, on top of, hey, I need to solve this problem. And that's where you probably tend to get more people going rogue or doing their own thing. But if you're over responding, you're forcing people into that process and that framework that you've designed.
The way you want things to be done.
Right.
Yes. I remember early in my career leading crisis management that I was faced with kind of a similar situation, and I wasn't thinking of it in this way, but there were a number of protests going on across the country because of some political issue. And this crisis, so to speak, was being handled primarily by communications because it was viewed as a reputational problem. But these protests were disruptive and the comms team wasn't communicating the way that we did. There wasn't clear direction being given to teams. And I was in my boss's office complaining about this. Like, what do we do? And he just looks at me and goes, what do you mean, what do we do? You have a crisis management process you can activate and take. Because you're not really taking control, but you can at least coordinate this response across the company to a growing disruption and send communication out through your defined communication processes that is not happening today. So just activate it. And I'm like, why? Why would we do that? It's a protest. He goes, it's a disruption. Activate it.
Right.
So I went grumbling down the hall and I'm like, wait a minute. If I do this, then we're going to have calls to coordinate what's going on. And everyone's going to speak openly and we're going to get good cross-functional collaboration. We're going to be sending out communication to everyone about what's happening on a regular cadence, and stores are going to get direction. Why didn't I think of this? So by the time I got to my office, I was like, okay, let's activate.
The wise mind had kicked in.
The wise mind had kicked in. But like, this is the example of that was entirely it was not an overreaction, but it was definitely an over response in that this was a minor disruption to the organization, but it cleaned up our response in 24 hours. Like all of a sudden everyone knew what was going on.
Right.
The action communication to the field organization was clear, and all of the stakeholders and partners that needed to know had clear communication of what was happening.
And that's a great example of the benefits of that over response is hopefully what it does as well, kind of a byproduct, is it cleans up those secondary incidents that may occur. So if you botch a response to something that's relatively inconsequential, but the way you handle the response becomes the crisis. People are upset about how you went about it. Well, that's not the initial crisis, but it's definitely the new secondary emerging crisis out of that. And so hopefully what that over response does is it cleans it up. It, to your example, forces everybody into the room and organizes that response so that it's clear. And you don't have folks doing their own thing, creating other issues. All those gaps and issues are known kind of within this organization and can be either addressed immediately or say, you know what, we're parking lotting that. We'll come back to it. We're not
sticking in the parking lot.
Yeah, we're not super worried about that at the moment. We'll come back.
And I think there's a lot of connectivity on this topic to our previous episode, episode 86, about making yourself important. This is episode 87 now. But there's a lot of connectivity because I think that this kind of the similar thought process that we were talking about last week, that you have to make your function important and you have to be willing to put yourself out there as a leader to drive the results that your team is looking for and to make sure your team has the tools and resources and authority to do the things that you want them to do. I think it's closely connected to this, that mm-hmm. your willingness to use your processes or maybe bend your processes a little bit to get the outcome that you're trying to achieve for your organization. I think it is about this. I'm going to leverage this process as best I can. I'm making myself important by making this process stick in this situation.
Well, I think where it comes back to kind of call back to other episodes too, is when we've talked about kind of characteristics of crisis leaders and things like that, this is where those characteristics and that right person or persons in that incident leader role come into play so critically on kind of walking this line. Because if you have somebody who's not very good at it, can get a little bit too emotional, again, with all the positive intent in the world, but if they come across as overreacting to the situation, now you've essentially done harm to the process and the capability that you're trying to build. So it's really important that you find that right kind of right person or persons that walks that line of, hey, I want to be clear, we're over responding, not overreacting. We're applying this process to see if we need to do more, if everybody has what they need, mm-hmm. if there's any coordination we can help assist with, great. Do we feel like the severity is appropriate? You know, our thresholds, do they match kind of where we think this is at? Great, they do. Nobody needs anything, great. Then we will stand this process back up should we need it. You know, so it's really finding that, walking that line, and that's where some of those characteristics we mm-hmm. talked about in that previous episode come into play of you really need to walk that line of and being clear around we're over responding, not overreacting. Overreacting gets us in trouble. Over responding may inconvenience a few people from some meetings, but probably isn't going to do any harm to the organization.
Right. So I think we've covered the topic here pretty well. Again, if you haven't listened to our previous episode about making yourself important, there's a lot of correlation between the two. Yep. Definitely worth your time to hear episode 85. But with that, let's wrap up episode 86. We'll have a new episode next week. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Managing Uncertainty, produced by the experts at BrightPath. To receive notifications of new episodes, join our newsletter at brightpath.com or subscribe through your favorite podcast player, such as iTunes or Google Play. Learn more about the services and trusted advice from BrightPath by visiting brightpath.com. That's BrightPath.com.